Hey, welcome to One Board Podcast, the podcast where we explore the family side of board and tabletop games. Rick White, you are training to be an Olympic skier for the upcoming Olympics, and you're also on this podcast as my co-host. How are you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing very well. I'm actually very cold, but I am doing great. But yes, I'm also practicing my Korean, and that is coming along so well that I know absolutely no words in Korean.
That's good. That's good. I feel like you are as prepared as I am for the Olympics.
Yes, I kind of forgot that they were coming.
Well, I was reminded of the Olympics just probably 5 minutes ago when my wife was like, "I'm watching figure skating. I'm so excited." And I was like, "What? Oh, yeah, that thing. That's coming up."
My favorite Olympic sport is curling, obviously.
Of course.
Yeah. I actually have taken a learn to curl class, and it was awesome. And they have curling leagues up here in Atlanta. And if
Are you being serious?
I am being completely serious. And if there was time in my schedule for such a thing, I would be all about that, because it's got about as much. Imagine like a bowling league, but like less serious and on ice. And that's what you got.
I want to be the sweeper. I feel like he's got the sweeper has a rough job. You're directing that thing, you know? Yeah.
And you end up taking turns. It was cool because, like, it was me and then, like, three other people that did the class. And then, like, if you're more into it seriously, like, you can buy special shoes to be out on the ice with and stuff like that. But they are all, like, you can, like, totally do whatever. So, yes.
What's that, it like? Are they like golf shoes?
So it's like it has almost like a plate on the bottom of the shoe, because that's the one that the person that throws the stone slides on. That's the one they put all their weight on. So that shoe has like a flat bottom, circular bottom that's really a wide sole, I guess. And so it just slides along the ice. We're talking about curling.
This is the conversation that I think everybody came here for. Oh, I'm going to check out this board game podcast. Oh, curling for 5 minutes. Nice.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, we're going to move on to actual games. Rick, we have got an interesting topic today. We're talking about gacha games and how not to be a jerk when you play.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think anybody that has played board games in their life has had that person at the gaming table that kind of ruins everybody else's fun because they want to either like play super strict by the rules. And so they, you know, mess somebody's turn up because they, you know, missed one little thing, or they work really hard to ruin everybody else's turns. Even if it's like a mechanic in the game, the way that they execute is just so obnoxious. Yeah. You're like, come on, guy.
Yeah, and gacha games, to me, when I think about gacha games, I think about the ones that are really backstabby. We talked a couple of weeks ago when Aaron was on the show with us about, Vikings on Board. On Board turned out to be a super backstabby game, even though it was just a worker placement game, because you're really taking the power and control away from other people by doing specific things. And our family actually just played a game last night and today, a game called Quartz that my son got. I bought Josiah Quartz for Christmas because he really loved the game when we were playing with some guy that I know at work, and we had a great time with Quartz. But the cards there are these, so essentially you're dwarves in a mine, and you're trying to mine these different gems. And you draw them from the bag, and you can either draw a gem from the bag secretly in this little black bag, or you pull a card and you use the card against another player. And some of the cards are really backstabbing. It makes a person draw two gems, and then you pick one gem and they get the other one. So you might leave them with garbage that's going to knock them out of the mine. It's a really fun game, but it gets tough. Everybody's looking around, looking at everybody's mine carts to see what they've got and see who they want to knock out of the game. It's a tough one.
Yeah, and you know, there are some games where, you know, the whole game is about like a few like people that are spies or something. I'm thinking like a resistance where there are some bad guys and then there's good guys. Like, that's the job of the person, is to mess things up.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. It's those games where it's not necessarily all of the game, but maybe part of it or even a big part of it, and people will use it to maybe really ruin the time of a person. If they're doing it, I guess maybe for them they're having fun, but maybe for the other person or maybe even everybody else they're not having fun. The game.
So how would you?
Sorry, go ahead.
How would you put something like the game Family Business? Because I think one of the ways that Family Business, it's a card game where everybody's playing this mafia family. Everyone has, I think it's 8 or 9 mafia family members, and one by one people are being picked off of a hit list. It's a fun little game, but it gets very competitive. It gets very, like, everybody's stabbing each other in the back. But I think where the game has fallen apart is when everybody makes a beeline to murder one person. I think when we talk about gacha games and how not to be a jerk, I think, you know, when you're intentionally destroying someone,
right,
every game, that it makes the person just have the worst time.
And that was my personal experience, I think, the first time I played it. Actually, it was, I don't know, and these are pretty cool guys and I like them, but Jordan from mm-hmm. down there in Columbus, he and some guys from Columbus State, Chi Alpha, I was at a Chi Alpha retreat, which is a campus ministry. It was a retreat statewide for the leadership of the student leadership there. And I sat down with these guys. They're like, "Want to play this game?" I was like, "Yeah, sure. I like games."
Yeah.
And like, they laid into me, and I don't know if it was like, haha, get the first timer, or if, I don't know, I had done something. I have no idea. Or if this was just how the cards laid, but I was out of that game almost immediately. And
yeah,
then they were like, "Okay, we can keep going with the game." So, you know, that for me, I brushed it off and I was like, that's fine. But, you know, otherwise, if I had been maybe a new gamer or wasn't so sure about these people, I might have been kind of ticked off that that's how the game went for me. Because I, at that point, I had no control. There was nothing I could have done with any of my cards or any kind of strategy that would have prevented me from getting destroyed.
Yeah. And I think we talked about first board game dates last episode, how to pick games to play with newer players. And I think this kind of goes hand in hand with it. You don't want to pick this gacha game or this game that has a lot of backstabbing mechanics, because you can really bring an aversion to board games. You think about people who play a board game for their first time and they're like, this is terrible. Why would I want to get into this hobby? And so I think when you play gacha games and games that have these backstabbing mechanics, you need to play with people who understand, or, hey, this is nothing personal, but I'm going to destroy you at this table. You know, make sure that you go in with the right attitude.
Right. And there's an amount that you can do of this that is kind of a little, you know, cheeky fun, where, you know, we play Colt Express and it's that, you know, that you've set somebody up to, they think they're going to get some treasure and your move is going to actually cause them to lose treasure and throw off their entire game plan, like in a programmable game. And yeah, it's, you know, kind of backstabby, but it also is just a bit of, hey, you were winning, I'm trying to win, or just kind of a little friendly rivalry. I think you can do it right. You can definitely do it right. And, you know, I do think there are some people out there that their fun is found in these kind of competitive games and this kind of fighting their way to the top. And, you know, that might just not be a person I play games with all that often, because that's different than my philosophy. But, you know, more power to you. You find a group of people that like playing those games, then go enjoy yourself.
Let me ask you this, I think, because sometimes people might get into a situation where they're getting into a gamer group or they meet some people who really enjoy this type of mechanic. How would you go about saying, hey, you know, I'm not really into this type of game? How would you go about addressing that? Because I think you've been in some different gamer groups and things like that. So I think you and I would have some tact in the way that we approach people. You know, how do you do that effectively and share, hey, this is not really my bag, but hey, can I throw out some suggestions?
Right. I think I've often found with gamer groups, especially those that are comprised of more random, you know, people, I am able to, usually people are pretty respectful if somebody says, no thanks, I don't want to play that, of finding something else. If you've been to Gamerama or Atlanta Game Fest, I've sometimes had moments where I spend more time with all of us just, there's always also that one person that's like, nah, don't feel like that. Oh, nah, I don't feel like that. But you can eventually get to a game that you want to play. But then if there is somebody playing something that you don't want to play, you know, I've bit the bullet before and just kind of played around once or twice with some people, especially if it's a quick game. I guess I might also be taking the coward's way out, because sometimes I'll be like, you know what, I got to go do something real quick and I'll be back, but it might take a while. You guys go ahead and get started, and then I occupy myself for 10, 15 minutes and then come back. So so it kind of all depends. If it's, you know, your friends, you should be able to be honest with them and say, you know, I'd rather not, let's play something else. Or if it's some random folks, either, you know, maybe you'll have a good time or find a way to get yourself out of there.
Now, I've had a conversation with a friend at work over the past couple of months. This topic's come up a couple times. How do you deal with being in a setting with another couple? Okay, so you're a married person. Both of you guys enjoy games, similar to me and my wife Erin. You know, how do you work around the inevitable? There's two scenarios that we've talked about, me and this guy at work have talked about in the past. Either the couple that they're afraid to attack each other, so there's four of you sitting at the table and they are only going to pick on the other person that they're, the other two people that they're not married to. They're afraid to attack the person that is their spouse. How do you deal with that? And then also, how do you deal with the person who is like hyper aggressive at the table? You know, I think back last night, I was playing Quartz and we had a neighbor over and we were having a great time, but like he started getting at me. So I started getting at him. And then I saw that my wife was winning. So I started getting her. And I got a little aggressive, I think. Like I wasn't being mean or rude, but I think I probably came off a little aggressive. I was like, well, you're in the lead. I'm going to take you out, you know? Right.
Well, and I think, too, there's part of it of, in addition to not being a jerk, I think there's the part of don't be so sensitive. Like, when there are these elements in the game, you have to understand that you're going to get attacked. And, you know, it's nothing personal. You know, I mean, maybe it does become personal. I thought you were going to say the other situation is the couple only attacks each other, where it's like, I don't even care that there's two other people at the table. I'm going to get my husband or I'm going to get my wife.
That's usually the words that are said at the table are, as long as I beat my husband or wife, I'm fine with losing.
Right. You know? Who even cares? But I think having an understanding of you're going to get attacked, especially if you're in first place, even if you don't know, like, I know sometimes Sarah, as we're learning a game, will find herself in first place and not that she doesn't know how she did it, but she's not still kind of picking up on the rules and not really sure, like, how are these things working? And if I do some sort of attack mechanic, she'd be like, why did you do that? And I'm like, because you're winning. Like, I know you're still learning, but you're also beating me. So I think that was, I actually can guarantee that's a thing that happened in Seven Wonders Duel in our first game, where I think she at times was like, oh, why did you do all these things to me that I couldn't? And then she won the game. And I'm like, now you understand why I was attacking you. So I think you have to find that balance of being okay attacking person, but not going overboard, and understanding you will be attacked and not being so sensitive about it. And, you know, just like in other games that don't have this mechanic, but have like mechanics where somebody might take the piece that you were wanting. You've got to have backup strategies and you've got to be ready to do other things in the game, I think.
Yeah, definitely, man. This is just a little conversation that Rick and I have had about how not to be a jerk at the game table, especially with these gotcha games that can come to the table. They're not all good and they're not all bad, but if you find yourself in that scenario of being involved in a game where you're going to be backstabbing somebody, do it with a little bit of class and a little bit of grace.
Yeah,
isn't that right?
And I think this is one of those genres that there are definitely people out there that are just like, I do not want to play those games. And you know what? I would like for you to be more exploratory, but you know, if you've tried it and you don't like it, that's fine with me.
Some people just don't dig confrontation, and I get it.
Yeah, and Ryan, I think we're in our next segment going to be hitting up a different category that I've often found people are willing to jump into, and it's a personal favorite category of mine here in our next section in Mechanics Corner. We are back, Ryan, here in Mechanics Corner today. We're going to be hitting one of my favorite types of games, and that is dexterity. Dexterity games are some of my favorites. Got quite a few in my collection. Why don't you tell us what we mean by dexterity? I don't think it means the ability to touch your toes. What does it mean?
Unless the game is Touch Your Toes, the home version.
Yes.
Which is actually... No, I'm just playing.
Yeah, I think that's out of print.
Yeah, it's out of print. It's been out of print for years. It got real awkward. Actually, dexterity games, the dexterity game genre, it's really cool because there are so many different ways to approach dexterity games. Essentially, what you're looking at is something that involves you flicking or speed, motion. You know, a lot of the games, like, you can even think about Jenga as a dexterity game. Jenga is a dexterity game. How steady can you be as you pull that piece off of the Jenga tower? You know, there's a lot of different dexterity games that we see. There's party dexterity games. There's, you know, I think of these as very family-friendly games that a lot of different age ranges can participate in. And it doesn't mean a dexterity game, if you're bad at it, I think this is where, Rick, you and I probably differ. I'm not a huge dexterity game fan like you are, but I think that I've learned over the years that if I give it a try and continue to play it, I get better and enjoy it more. You know, I'm not just naturally drawn to a dexterity game, you know?
Right. And I think, to me, dexterity games, you know, it's more of a physical than a mental game. And so I think one thing that helps with dexterity games is it gets people who may not want to have like a thinking strategy, like deep experience, you know, that it allows them to have a different path to where they can have games that they're successful in. People that maybe not, that's not their thing, and like an engine building or something like that. I also think that dexterity games are some of the best games that you can have children involved in, because the process of having to come up with this big game plan or think a few moves ahead doesn't really matter in a lot of dexterity games. It's all about the here and now and instant action kind of deal.
And I think also if you've got a kid who can't sit still really, or if that's something that they struggle with, I think dexterity games are a great choice because there's some movement and some motion to these games that allow the kid to be up and about, and it's not just sitting in a chair staring at a couple cards, you know, and that's where dexterity games, I think, are a great fit for families and people, you know, of different age ranges. One of the dexterity games that our family really enjoys, we talked about a couple weeks ago on the podcast, Ice Cool. You're flicking penguins around this really cool school that's built out of boxes. The game has a really awesome feel. The components are excellent. And I mean, I've played with people who are grandparents, and I've played with kids that are 5 years old. And just because you're five or just because you're 60 doesn't mean you're going to win or lose. You know, your age really doesn't matter when you're flicking this penguin, and, you know, one good move can really put you over the top and, you know, let you win a round, you know?
Right. And it's, you know, all about the flicking of the penguin.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of these, you could even call them like flicking games almost, where you are, you know, flicking a game piece to get it to move. You can think of like your most basic version of this would be like paper football, which I played a million times as a kid. you know, you get there at school early and you're waiting until you can go to class, and they put you at those incredibly slick cafeteria tables. I mean, that's perfect paper football tabling right there. Another one kind of in the flicking category, and hey, look, we're calling back to something we talked about earlier in the show, is caveman curling. So our conversation was not pointless. Hooray! But in caveman curling,
I'm glad you just made that one up. Woo!
Woo! So caveman curling is kind of like curling, but people may be more likely to think of shuffleboard, where you'll have, it comes with this big, long piece of paper that's really sturdy, but that rolls up and fits in the game box, and then six cylinders that you will take turns flicking towards a target. And there's some other little power-ups that you can throw in, and it's got this nice little caveman theme. But I broke this out at a upper school game night where all of the kids were wanting to play apples to apples, or they were wanting to play, you know, Jenga, some of the standard games that people might think of. And I was like, we need to spice this party up. I didn't bring this bag of games that nobody knows about for no reason. So I broke out caveman curling. And within, you know, 3 minutes, I had some of my high school students were like screaming at each other in like, you know, frustration, but also like complete excitement about some of the shots that they were making and some of the things that they were able to pull off. And it was really funny. And I've brought it out with my family before too. So, and they enjoyed that. I think caveman curling is like ice cool in that it's basic. It involves flicking, and anybody, a 10-year-old is going to be just as likely to be successful as an 80-year-old.
Yep. That's right. Aaron, myself, and I think Kendall may have played. I think you and Kendall were on a team, and me and Aaron were on a team. We played caveman curling with you a couple years ago. It's a fun game. It's just, it's silly. It's fun. It brings everybody to the table. People are watching, hoping for their team or hoping for their family members to win. You're like, how could you miss that shot?
Right.
And yeah, it brings people to the table. Another one would be Flick 'em Up. Flick 'em Up, we've done a review on oneboardfamily.com for Flick 'em Up before. That's a really fun game. You've got the cowboys, and you have the, what do you call, like the bank robbers and the outlaws. And so each side you move your character forward by flicking a disc and letting it settle at a certain point. And then you put your meeple on that spot, and then you can shoot with a smaller disc. It's basically knocking down these other meeples with this little bullet disc that you shoot. The game is a lot of fun. It's actually one that I wish that we broke out more. We've got a big dinner table at our house, and it's the perfect surface for Flick 'em Up. That's a really fun game, and you can find that. That's one that Pretzel Games put out that has been really successful.
Yes, it's a pretty good one. I like that one. I think there's a couple others that involve flicking. Cube Quest is one that I had that has some more advanced rules, but it all boils down to trying to knock one particular cube of the other player's team off of the map kind of deal. Cube Quest is pretty fun. There are some other things, too, beyond just flicking, though, when it comes to dexterity. One game that you and I think both, we almost destroyed One Board Family, I think, Ryan, when we saw this at Atlanta Game Fest at the yard sale. I forget what the term is for it.
Yeah.
But somebody was about to sell it, and I had gotten it, and you were like, oh, no, I wanted that game. But yes, that was Rampage, which is now known as Terror in Meeple City. And that's a pretty fun little dexterity game. And that one, it's also one of the longest setups of any game in the world, where you make buildings, but the buildings' support structures are actually meeples. And so you build like buildings out of meeples and cardboard levels, and then you play the role of giant monsters destroying the city. And so there are different ways that you can do that, where there is a flicking mechanic where you can quote unquote throw a car. So you flick something towards a building. There is where you can stomp on the building, so you drop your monster from a particular height. There's also one of my favorites, but I think I have yet to see it used effectively is the monster breath, where you can put your chin on the monster piece and then blow on the building. So there, and the whole part is trying to collect meeples by eating them, and yeah. Whoever gets the most points.
So I, when Josiah and I played this, I actually effectively used that dragon breath method or whatever it's called. I was able to. There was a building that was about to topple over, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this other option, and I blew on the building and it fell over and a bunch of meeples spilled all over the city streets. And so I was able to collect some of those. The game is really fun, and it's cool because if you're a parent, have some patience in setting it up and then just let your kids play. That's a really cool game. Rampage, if you can find a used copy, Rampage or Terror in Meeple City. I guess one of the things to warn you about is you have to sticker it. Well, Rick, you didn't have to deal with this, but you have to sticker every single meeple. You have sheets of stickers, and the colored meeples come in a bag, and you have to put stickers on front and back of every single meeple.
Yes. So maybe before your children have all grown up, you will get done with it. But
yeah, it might take you a couple of years. So it reminds me of when I was building the Colt Express train pieces, building that train out of cardboard, and I got it for Christmas, and the day after Christmas, I sat there by myself in the living room for an hour and a half building this stupid train.
It is pretty cool, though.
It is pretty awesome. A big hit for 2017 was Flip Ships, a game called Flip Ships. This game, the art is fantastic. Every time I see the art, I stare at it. It's just beautiful. But essentially, you're flicking. If you remember Space Invaders, the spaceships are coming down at you, shooting at you. Well, you play with these ships that are kind of like Pogs. Do you remember Pogs?
Oh, Rick? Yes, I remember some Pogs, yeah. Man.
Throwback for all the 80s, late 80s, early 90s kids. You flick these Pog type of shapes onto the board, and when your ship lands on another ship, you take it out. So everybody, what's interesting about this one is everybody's working together, so it's a cooperative game. And then there's a mothership at the end, so once you get to a certain stage or level or whatever it is, you actually are flipping, you're trying to flick the ship into the mothership to destroy it. So it's a really cool game, and if you are looking for a good dexterity game that has some modern mechanics, that's one that I would definitely recommend for families. Flip Ships.
Yes, it's like, for those that have followed us for a while, and the most obscure game I think that we've ever reviewed was when I did the battle at Kimball's Cascade. It's like the dexterity version of that. And if you remember that, you need to let us know, because you're a super fan and I want to be friends with you.
Yeah, you are one of five people who read that review.
Yeah, there you go.
I can look back and see. I remember when you asked me, you said, hey, I've got this weird game and I don't know, I'm just going to review it. I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, that sounds pretty neat. And then I was like, I don't think anybody's going to look at this review.
Well, the whole reason I did that review was because I wanted to do a joke at the beginning of the video where a board game and my Xbox made a baby. That was the only reason I did that review.
So. Oh, my goodness. You didn't tell me that. Oh.
So, anyway, dexterity games is what we're talking about.
Dexterity games.
One other one that I think is, you know, it's not quite, we talked about like physical versus mental for dexterity games. And I think Jungle Speed still has a bit of mental in it in that, but
you
it's
love
very
Jungle
basic.
Speed.
Yes, I love Jungle Speed. Jungle Speed is where you are looking at different, you're looking at patterns on cards. And if you match, then you need to reach for the totem that's in the center of the table. And that kind of action of really trying to get that totem has turned that into one of the more violent games that we play at my school. I've seen girls wrestle into the floor to get that totem and come away with like bleeding carpet burn. But they are laughing the whole time. It is a super fun game. And I really like Jungle Speed. I think the original is out of print, but there's, I think like either a Rabbids version. I think there's a Rabbids version of that game. Yes.
Okay.
Or like Jungle Safari, I think you saw when you guys went to Miniature Market. So there are some examples, but I don't think the original is still available for sale.
Very cool. Well, let's transition into the review for this week. Rick, you have one, and it goes along with our Mechanics Corner theme of dexterity. We'll be back in just a minute. We're back, and Rick's got a review for us with a game called Junk Art. Rick, tell us a little about Junk Art from Pretzel Games.
So Junk Art is a game that caught my eye. I think back at Atlanta Game Fest 2015, 16, I can't even remember anymore, 15, I believe. And it's a game by Pretzel Games, and it comes in a box with just a bunch of pieces in four different colors. So very unassuming box and kind of hard to tell what it is at first, but this is a building game at its core. If you recall when you were younger, just maybe you had a set of blocks or even just things laying around and you built towers or castles out of them. And then you know, your action figures are fighting in front of them. This is like that kid's dream of a game. So Junk Art is, I believe, 2 to 6 players. It usually works best from 4 to 6, I would say, but you can definitely play it with less than that. And it's, building. That's what you're doing in a bunch of different ways.
There are two different versions of Junk Art. There's the original version, which is an all-wood version. All the pieces are wooden. The cards, obviously, are just cardstock and not wooden. That would be real clunky. But the box is this big wooden case, almost very similar to Pretzel Games' other one of Pretzel Games' other games, Flick 'em Up. But what they did was, later, they made another version that's made out of plastic. So, Rick, you've had hands-on with both the wooden version of Junk Art and the plastic version, which is actually the version that you purchased. What are your thoughts on the two different versions, and do you prefer one over the other?
You know, I think they're both very good. The wooden ones, there are some issues, I think, with a few of the pieces and how they were made. The plastic ones, I've got no problems whatsoever. It may be that they're not quite as durable, I'm not sure. But I have absolutely no problem with the pieces in either game. I think, honestly, the thing that you need most is a sturdy table. You know, you and I played this game for the first time on one of those, like, fold-out tables. And, you know, it became a game of, let's ruin everything when somebody accidentally nudges this wobbly table and it causes everything to collapse. A big solid table is more important than whichever version that you're planning on picking up.
Yeah. And honestly, if you look around, the original version, the wooden version, is very expensive in some places and out of stock often. Right. The plastic version of Junk Art can be purchased for a little less. So that might be the most family-friendly option if you're gaming on a budget. Tell me about, in the box, Junk Art, from what it's known for is just a bunch of different modes of the same game. So in Junk Art, what are some of the different modes that a player can expect when they're opening up this box and playing with family members?
Definitely. I think it has a great variety, too. There are, 14 or 16 different modes of games that you can play in the box. And some of them I haven't even played yet. I do believe there are some that are almost like must plays, and they're great for starting to introduce people to the game. So for instance, there's one where you each have 10 cards in a stack in front of you, and then you start the game and everybody is flipping over their cards one at a time, grabbing the piece from the pile of all the pieces in the center of the table and adding it to their personal tower. And you keep going as fast as you can until one person has a tower built with all of their 10 pieces. You know, that's kind of just a quick, pretty easy to explain game. And it's very obvious when you're winning, you know, that you have won kind of deal. There's some games where you all have, and there are cards included that represent every single piece. There is a game where you have four cards. You pick two to pass to a person to your left. They pick one of those cards. The card that they didn't pick, you now have to add to your tower. And then you're also using the card that you're going to pick from the person to your right. So you add two pieces to your tower each time. So you can, there's that. That has a little bit of strategy where, you know, you don't want to, you want to give them difficult pieces, but you know that one of them's coming back to you. So you got to be careful. There's also a round where you're all working together to build one tower in the middle. And it, I believe it's phrased that one, essentially one person loses if five pieces over the course of the game fall down while they're placing a piece, but and everybody else wins. But that part's really cool to see everybody watching you try to make this placement of a piece work. It's really cool, and I think that is often the favorite game when I play with people because of that kind of, oh, they gave you a hard piece. Oh my gosh, she made it stay kind of deal. Yeah. I think goes really well.
Junk Art offers a lot of points of just like the oh wow factor of playing this game together. This game works really well as kind of like a party game where everybody's kind of standing around. You know, it's a very casual game. I really enjoyed our time with it, and I'm actually excited to hopefully get to play a couple times with you this year with the version that you picked up, because I would love to see the plastic version, see how it plays, and be at a sturdier table. I think you were right on. Like, the sturdiness of your table matters greatly. If you have the ricketyest card table, dining room table, this probably isn't a game that you want to pick up. But Junk Art offers a lot of fun in this box and a lot of different modes. For all the modes that you get and the price of the game, I think there's a lot of value packed into this game.
Definitely. And when we were talking about how like anybody can play it, I am being 100% honest when I say that there was I think 3 or 4 year old sitting at our family reunion that we do the day after Christmas to all get together. He was playing the game with us, the speed round where you draw the cards. We gave him 7 cards instead of 10, but he was legit flipping over the cards, finding the pieces, and putting them in his tower. Now, he didn't build the tower exactly right, but how cool is it that a 3-year-old is playing alongside like 40-year-olds and essentially playing the same game? That was really cool. You know, I just gave it a shot. I was like, you know what? Maybe he can play. Let's not shoot him down. And it was really fun to, you know, have that where he was honestly playing and enjoying himself and having a good time and, you know, being his little 3-year-old self.
That's really cool, Rick. We've actually got the review that you did for Junk Art a couple months ago on the website. Go to oneboardfamily.com and you can check out the full review of Junk Art and see what Rick had to say, the pros and the cons. If you've ever seen some of our reviews, at the bottom we like to put highs and lows. Instead of giving a rating to our reviews, I feel like that's not very helpful sometimes to rate something and say, well, it's a 9. It's a 9 for everybody. Instead, we give you highs and lows and talk about some of the things that we liked about it, and you know, some things may not be sticking points for you. So definitely check out that review for Junk Art. And Rick, that'll do it for this episode of the One Board Podcast. Next episode, Rick, why don't you tell us what's coming up next week?
So next week we are going to do the always desired and always present top 5 games lists for you and I. I'm actually really excited about that. I know we do a lot of, you know, recommendations of games and things at times. I think it's going to be really cool for people to get to see. All right, they say that they like a lot of games, but which ones are like their favorite ones? I think that's going to be a really cool experience for our listeners.
That's right. We've got our top 5 games list, and we'll kind of give you insight into why this made our top 5. Why is this game important to us? Some are nostalgic reasons. Some are just this was a pivotal moment for us when we got into gaming. So you guys check that out next Tuesday when we release it. And that'll do it for this episode of the podcast. Rick, have fun gaming. So, oh, maybe we could have a top five curling list coming up, like hair curling, curling pigtails, like the actual curly tail on a pig.
Yeah.
Curling, the ice sport.
Curling, like what a weightlifting term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Curly, one of the Stooges.
One of the Stooges. Top five curling.